Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. If you heard our recent episode on the making of Blade Runner 2049, when we talked to the guys who made all that on-screen tech that you see in the film, you'll know just how excited we are here in the Cosmic Shed about the forthcoming Steven Spielberg film, Ready Player One, based on the Ernie Cline novel. Now, we all went to see The Last Jedi at midnight recently, and the trailer for Ready Player One played before the film. Any fears I had about them not getting the look of the film right, and it reminded me that when Ty and I were at For the Love of Sci-Fi recently, we managed to catch up with Zach Galligan, who played Billy in the Gremlins films. And it's coming on Christmas, we've got Ready Player One round the corner. Gremlins is a great Christmas film, it's a great film. And so here is Zach Galligan at For the Love of Sci-Fi in Manchester earlier this month.
So, I mean, these conventions, you must come to them a lot.
Tons, yeah. Been doing them for decades.
So what question are you kind of fed up of answering these days? Which question, when you're asked, you just roll your eyes and go, not again?
Well, I'd never roll my eyes because it's part of my job.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Let's put it this way. There are a number of very popular questions. In order of popularity, I would say the most interesting one people want to know is, and I guess it plays into their fantasy life, which is, was it fun doing the movie?
Yeah.
Of course it was fun doing
it. Yeah.
I mean, you think it was misery. Doing a Spielberg movie with Phoebe Cates. I mean, you know what I mean? When you're 19 years old, it was torture.
Yeah.
And of course it was fun doing it. So that's kind of an obvious one. But I think people know that it's fun. What they want to hear is, how fun was it? Is what they really want to know. And the answer is, it was just, you know, mind-blowing. Incredibly... It was as great as you would think it would be.
Yeah.
It really was. Second most popular question is probably, what was it like working with those things and how did they work? And I've learned to shorten that over the years because it's a rather drawn-out explanation. So, it's, you know, basically I say, well, basically they were animatronics and it was new technology and they were robots and everything. And then the third most popular question is, what was it like to work with Phoebe?
Oh.
Men seem to be particularly...
I can't imagine why.
...fascinated by that question. And the answer to that was, she was absolutely lovely, sweet, charming, beautiful young woman, and exactly what you would hope it would be. So it was really kind of an ideal experience for me as a 19-year-old, you know. It was it's just great.
How did Spielberg sell it to you as a film?
He didn't need to do... He just needed to say he was involved with it, and that sold me. He was really doing Temple of Doom at the time, so he was kind of more of an executive producer on the film, which meant that he kind of shaped the script, and he was responsible for the casting, at least the casting for the first two leads, Phoebe and myself, and maybe a few other editorial decisions. But, I mean, he didn't even have final cut on the movie. That was... Joe Dante's call. So basically what he did was, he did the executive production kind of stuff and then cashed the check.
Yeah.
You know, which is great. But I mean, that's what the executive producer does, so he did it very well.
Like you said, the technology behind the Gremlins and the Mogwai was a mixture of like animatronics and mm-hmm. puppets. From mm-hmm. an acting point of view, was that not challenging, but what challenges were there with the puppets? Did they always work when, you know, the Gremlins are running down the street? Was that
That's the one shot that you just pointed out, the Gremlins running down the street.
Motion.
That's like claymation practically.
Yeah.
That's the one stop motion shot that's in the movie. In fact, that's the only one. The rest of the time, it's just animatronics and multiple technicians working. Now, was it challenging? It was more challenging for them than it was for me. I mean, stuff would break down all the time. But when stuff broke down, I just went over to Spielberg's office and played his arcade games. So for me, it wasn't a big deal.
So, I mean, that leads us to ask, what kind of arcade games did Steven Spielberg have in his office in 1983?
He had Pole Position and he had Millipede. And I played Millipede so much that about a month after the shoot was over, he shipped it to me, the arcade game. He shipped it to me unannounced to my apartment. So I was at my apartment just watching TV, and the buzzer rang for the freight elevator, which is in Manhattan. We have apartments, you have a front door and you have a back door, and the back door is like where you put the trash in the freight elevator, bring up big packages, and when you moved in you'd come up in the freight elevator. So the freight elevator came up and there's this massive box. They said, "Are you, is Zach Galligan?" I'm like, "Yeah." They're like, "Sign here." And I'm like, "What is going on?" And it just said, "Keep playing, yeah. Steven."
Nice.
They sent me the arcade game, and I had it for years, and I eventually it kind of fell apart in like 1993, and I junked it because there was there's no internet or eBay in 93. It didn't really come around for about 5 years later. Kind of wish I'd hung on to it because
kind of explains why he's doing Ready Player One. He's getting back to that arcade roots.
Well, there was one time when he was back doing something and I was playing Pole Position, and he came in behind me and he was like, "Do you want to play?" And I was like, I was all cocky because I was thinking, he's an older guy, I'm a kid, I'm an arcade guy, you know what I mean? And it was like, he was like, "Yeah," I was like, "Yeah, sure, let's play." So I thought I did really well, and then he took over, and the next thing you know, like, I was just driving through the fields, he's driving through like cities and things like this, and he just destroyed me.
Gremlins 2 has a reputation for being one of the most wall-breaking sequels and just kind of out there ones of all time. Have you seen the Key and Peele sketch?
Yeah.
Where they come up with a conception.
Let me tell you, anything having to do with Gremlins, I've seen.
Of course.
I have a Twitter feed and I get bombarded. The second Key and Peele comes out, 600 people send me the link to the sketch, say, "Have you seen this?" So there's rarely anything having to do with Gremlins that I haven't seen because of social media.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen the Key and Peele sketch. It's cute. It's charming. They kind of get Joe Dante pretty well. The guy, one of the guys, looks exactly like Joe Dante's hairstyle and the way he dresses and everything like that. Like, it's almost like they've met him, or they looked at pictures of what he was like on the set because it's pretty identical. So yeah, it's cute.
Did you think it was weird the way the sequel went? Did you have any reservations about a vegetable gremlin or an electricity gremlin?
No, I thought those were all cool, and you know, working with Rick Baker, who didn't do the first one. Chris Wayless did the first one. Rick Baker took over for Chris Wayless because Chris Wayless almost had a nervous breakdown doing the first one and refused. They offered him the second one. Chris Wayless said, "I'm never doing anything to do." Like, he had PTSD about Gremlins. Seriously, he said, "I can't do it." And so they asked Rick Baker to do it. And Rick actually called up Chris Wayless because they knew each other. And he said, "Look, they're offering me Gremlins 2. Are you sure you don't want to do it?" He's like, "You have my blessing. Go with God. Do it. Everything's cool." So Rick took over. And he really is, you know, nothing against Chris Wayless, but Rick Baker is really a genius. Yeah. And he'll go down in history as one of the greatest effects guys ever. I mean, the guy's won 7 Oscars. Yeah. Where I think Gremlins 2 went wrong with me was I felt that they were like human sections and then there were gremlin sections, and I didn't really feel that they wove them together as well as they did in the first one, because I think the first one really works because of the kind of puppet human interaction seems so believable.
Yeah.
Kind of carries the thread of the movie along, whereas in the second one there are times when I'm sitting there and I'm in the movie and I'm starring in the movie and I'm going, this is like a Muppet movie, you know.
Yeah. Well, the inevitable Gremlins 3 question that I'm sure you're tired of asking, but if they were to make one, apart from insisting that it was puppets and animatronics, where would you like the sequel to go?
I'd like to go back to the tone of the first one. I think that's what Chris Columbus wants to do. He wrote the first one, he's written the third one. And I think they're going to do a return to that kind of darker, edgier, scarier, you know, two sides of the same coin, light and dark kind of thing that they did in the first one. And, you know, I don't even know if I'm in it, but we'll see.
Zach, of course you're in it. But thank you very much for talking.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I'm sure we'll see some of you at the Planetarium in Bristol on January the 9th when we've got Andy Weir talking about Artemis live in the Planetarium. And we'll be back very soon with various episodes in 2018 on whatever science fiction and science has to offer. It's been a great 2017. Thank you all so much for listening and sticking with us. And if you're listening to this sometime in the future, sorry about that, but thank you for listening.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.